Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 496, You Shall Not Split, recorded live on July 23rd, 2015. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Toss.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
We're here talking about some Halo 5 stuff. We're going a little on the controversial route tonight. We're taking a break from some of the other bigger news that we've talked about. We just did a podcast on New Blood, and now we're kind of jumping onto the Halo 5 stuff, especially since there's been a few topics that have come up since E3 and San Diego Comic-Con that we need to talk about a little bit on the show. Some stuff that has had the community in a little bit of a
tizzy.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And some other things that aren't quite as big of issues, but it's still something that we could talk about. But we are wireless again tonight. He's still working on internet access, but supposedly, from what he's told us, he will have better internet, so he can't call it Hamsternet anymore. But we had to come up with a new name, so we'll be taking votes for names or nominations for names in the chat tonight if you're on the Twitch stream, so go ahead and type them away if you want to. And we'll make sure Bio hears about them later on in the staff chat. But we're going to be talking about a few different things tonight. Primarily, we have a couple of topic ideas that we want to talk about. There's going to be some things that we'll ask for the community to type into the chat while we talk during the show. So if you are here in the live stream, then we will ask for a few topics a little bit later in the show. So get your thinking caps on and think about some of the stuff you would like us to talk about. A few things that we are going to talk about for sure is going to be the no split screen coming to Halo 5 Guardians, no local LAN support, the requisition system for Warzone, and a few other things. But those are kind of the primary big ones. I think the big one being the no split screen. That was something that was big out of E3. Requisition packs isn't something that was as big of an issue. And we did talk about it during our E3 show for a little bit when we had Unicheck on. But other than that, the only other big thing I can think of is the no local LAN. And that also kind of plays into no split screen thing with the campaign announcement during E3. So we'll get to those. First off, I think for the sake of time, it's probably going to be a short-ish show unless we get a lot of questions from the chat tonight. We are giving away another SDCC pin. We only have a few more that we're going to be giving away on the stream. So if you're listening to this, make sure you show up for the next few shows as we count down to 500, because we'll probably be giving away something every show counting down to our 500th episode, which, if it turns out the way I'm wanting it to, episode 500 will be our anniversary panel at RTX, which will be cool.
Definitely
looking forward to that. So let's just jump right into things. Again, for those in the Twitch stream, hold your topic suggestions until we ask for them. I'll let you guys know when we're looking for those, because if you put them in now, they're going to get lost in the mess of chat. So just hold on to those, and we'll be holding the giveaway till the end as well. So let's go ahead and talk about the no split screen thing for Halo 5 Guardians. So they announced during E3 that there's going to be no split screen support for Halo 5 Guardians at all. This is not just campaign. This is campaign and multiplayer. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? I know I got a chance to talk to some of the 343 folks about some of the reasons behind them doing no split screen, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts before I kind of start on my what I've talked with the devs about and what my thoughts are on it. So Godzilla, let's start with you.
I have to look at it, you know, from my point of view, it's not something that's really going to affect me personally, because generally when I'm playing solo anyway. All the friends that I have around here that did play Halo with me, we just never get together to play Halo anymore. Everybody's, you know, life's gotten more complicated and things like that. It is something that will be missed by a lot of people. because there are still a lot of people out there that do play split screen. Is it worth the graphic upgrade? That's, you know, in my opinion, that's a personal opinion. To me, yes, it's worth the graphics upgrade, because I've always liked when, and I've just recently figured this out. I like the 60 frames per second. It makes the game much easier for me to play, because your movements are so much smoother. They're your inputs, the input that you do put in with a controller match what your eye sees. So, you know, to me, it's worth it. Will I miss it? Yeah. If I actually had some friends that would, you know, come over to my house and want to play. The other things, I would really hope that they find a way to do it in the future, because from what I've understood, it's a coding issue. They had to get the 1080p 60 frames per second, they had to drop the split screen. So, you know, my hope is in the future, maybe they find a way to maybe later on introduce it back into the game, because that would make a lot of people happy. But there again, you know, a lot of people, and it's been going this way ever since Halo 2 launched, people have been moving to the virtual couch. There's more and more people that play on their own Xbox, on their own TV, in their own home. Not as many people get together like they used to, you know, all sit down in front of one TV and play co-op, you know, whether it be campaign or multiplayer. So I can see it getting, I can see why they would cut that. And a lot of the new games that have come out have also, you know, they also do not have, you know, split screen in it. So I think it's just a sign of the times.
I'm in the camp that I won't miss split screen at all, personally. Yeah, like you said, sign of the times, it's kind of a dead thing. And yes, there are definitely that group of people that they look forward to this split screen with their kids or their spouse or a friend that they've done with every game. But we are slowly seeing that all become a virtual couch, like you said. And I split screen so little now, it is just not something I can see myself missing, or I don't even foresee one of those situations where I'm like, dang, it'd be really nice to have a split screen here. It doesn't relate to my lifestyle or my gaming style now. And like a lot of people are saying, no guests in multiplayer. That's, for me, that's a win. Yes, it's great to have that opportunity when your friend comes around, but I don't run into that myself. And guests can either ruin, make or break a online experience for some people. If I get into a game and one person has three guests in, then usually my team of four or my full party gets split up to accommodate that off number with the guests. And I'm not going to miss that at all.
Or you get paired up with the person that's doing three player split screen, and either they lag out or they quit.
Yeah.
And then you're in the match running solo.
Or someone gets booted.
Exactly. And
then three people get booted. Yeah.
One of your guests, you know, one of their guests betrays you. You not thinking, you go ahead and kick them, and well, you just kick three people out of the game.
Yeah, you just lost half your team.
It also leans more towards accountability for your actions, because, you know, playing as a guest, you do whatever you want. You betray teammates. You could be a total jerk, and it's nothing on you. It might reflect badly on the person that's hosting the, you know, that you're playing on. But I think, and you know, that's probably just a really, really small part of it.
I've left bad feedback on people that bring guests in.
Oh, I have too.
If their guests are misbehaving.
Yeah, I have too. And I think some people, it's not going to change the way they play, period, as far as that point is. They're just going to be jerks. But now, at least if they're jerks, you can report that person. The local split screen has been a Halo staple since the beginning. Mm-hmm. I remember playing two-person co-op campaign with my friend.
But you can't really say, like, every game, something gets cut, changed, or, you know, added that people are going to have an issue with. Halo 2, people were upset that the pistol wasn't there. Halo 3, people were upset that the auto-aim and the button combos weren't there. And they added, I mean, within the game, they added things. But split screen is kind of one of those things. It's going to affect your game experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I honestly think for the masses, if people were real with themselves, they're not going to miss split screen. They don't, back in tournament play, they used to split screen. They don't even do that anymore. There's no reason. And for the Xbox, let's be honest, on an Xbox picture, they have to do whatever they can to make Halo, their top game, run as good as possible, look as good as possible, because it's behind the PlayStation on almost every title. So they need that platform to say, look how gorgeous we can make our games on our platform. At the same time, though,
they're also showing their limitations.
True.
To an extent. Now, for me, the whole issue with no split screen is I'm the only person in my family that has an Xbox One. And whenever I go home to my parents and my brothers, it's usually something that I bring my Xbox with me, I bring my games with me, and we'll play together. Because that's something that I'm very interested in, and it's something that my dad has a interest in because I'm interested in. So he wants to like get a taste for what I do on a regular basis. And my brothers enjoy it from time to time as well. So we go and play big team matchmaking because that's kind of a safe place for them to go and not get just completely plastered or yelled at. And we have a good time. Or we do campaign, or for Halo 4, I would do Spartan Ops with my dad if it was just me and him at home. So I feel that there's a lot of the family crowd for Halo that's going to take a big hit with the no split screen stuff. And I know in talking with 343, they said that for the games that were online, they didn't really notice a significant user base that was doing split screen for anything like matchmaking, Spartan Ops, campaign, that kind of stuff. And while I agree that the majority of people that play Halo are not doing split screen, there's still a corner of the community that's going to take a drastic hit. And there's another portion of that community that doesn't play online. They're offline people. I mean, our founder, Fumo Jive, there was a good, I want to say, 3 years or so where he did not have Xbox Live, and all he did was play single player games.
Mm-hmm.
So there are purchasers of the game out there that never connect to Live. Now, with Xbox One, you kind of have to connect. So if they're taking their data from the MCC, then maybe there's a little more foundation behind the reason not to do split screen for Halo 5. But I still think there's a significant portion of the community, whether it may be 10 or 15%, that's going to take a hit with this. And that means now I can't bring my Xbox One home and play with my family. Because, they're not going to buy 3 Xbox Ones and 3 additional TVs just so that we can play Halo when I go home.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of allude to. You know, there still is a sizable group or sizable population in Halo that play split screen. But most of the people that play online, and I do mean truly online, how many people play on a monitor that's bigger than 25 inches?
I play on a 23.
Mine's 24.
I play on a 21. Now, on the opposite end of that spectrum, when Halo 3 was about to launch, I bought a 56-inch TV.
Oof.
For the simple fact that at that time, me and my friends would get together and play split screen. And when you're playing split screen on, like my previous TV was a 25-inch CRT. Ooh.
Nice.
You put 4 people on one of them, and you're lucky if you can see the reticle on a rocket launcher.
I learned how to play Halo on a 13-inch TV, 4-player split screen with a VHS player.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like that's how I learned.
Travel TVs.
I will never go back to that ever. Like, I got it down to two people as, you know, we continued to gain Xboxes in the neighborhood and then within my house, period. But I don't split screen. And I split screen with my wife like once in the last year, and she probably won't do it for another 3 years. So it doesn't affect me.
You need to find some other family games, dude.
We got a Wii now, so we're good.
Okay.
But
okay,
it's just I think people are taking this way too far, and I think, you know, it's one of those things people can complain about, so they're going to complain about it when they won't just take a second, step back, and see how much does this really affect them. Does it affect them in a way that makes them say, wow, I can't enjoy this game at all the way I intend to? Or is it, well, that's going to be unfortunate every once in a while? And I guarantee 97% or more, it's going to be, oh, that's going to be unfortunate every once in a while. But that other 97 to 99% of the time, this game is going to be exactly how it would have been, period. That's personally my feeling.
To go back to the whole thing that I mentioned earlier, where it's showing the weakness, like you mentioned, Haas, that it shows with how much PS4 is ahead of Xbox. The whole thing that the flagship product for Xbox that has traditionally been known as kind of that gateway game where you could do split screen and get your friends to come on is now leaving that arena. And that flagship product is still struggling to get in features. And I've heard people say, and I'm not sure how accurate this is, but I still hear people say that Halo 5 campaign is not 1080p yet, 60 frames.
I have no problem believing that personally.
And it's a struggle to get the campaign to that part, to that point. That's showing that the hardware on the console isn't up to snuff with the PS4, which it seems like the PS4 isn't having really many problems with any other games getting up to 1080p, 60 frames per second.
No.
Well, I mean, you look at the hardware specs, there's not that much difference in the hardware specs. I mean, yeah, the Xbox has a little less in the RAM department, but you look at the video specs and the processor, they're really not that different.
I mean, it could come down to software, though. That could be the little bit of it.
I can't argue that. The Xbox One operating system does seem to be bloated. I mean, just with the way
apparently it's supposed to get better.
Supposedly with the Windows 10 upgrade to the Xbox One, it's supposed to get better. But
Laird is saying PS4 hasn't even gotten their games to 1080 60 yet, their flagship titles.
Oh, really?
That's what he's saying.
Okay. Then I stand corrected. It just still is one of those things that it kind of boggles the mind that something that would have been considered one of the core features of Halo that was kind of a gateway reason why so many people got on Halo in the first place is now non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kind of think we should have more of an issue with what the Xbox One is than what 343 is able to do within the framework they have. Because they're trying to make the most out of what they can.
This is true.
These consoles are running on 5 to 7 year old technology, honestly. I mean, yeah, it would have been really expensive 5 to 7 years ago, but the hardware in these things is not, for something that's 2 years old, it's got some pretty overall old.
It's got dated tech in it.
Yeah, it's just,
it's, you know, like I said on a previous podcast.
It's an unfortunate, that's what consoles are, though. They are dated technology that are more for the budget gamer. Mm-hmm. Really?
I mean, if you want to do state of art gaming, PC game, because your wallet determines how state of the art you are. Console gaming is not for state of the art gaming.
Nope.
And I don't have a problem with that.
They tout it as such, though.
But they can't. They're not going to talk down their product. I mean, they can't come out. This is almost PC gaming. Like, nobody's going to come out and say that.
Yeah.
Well, no, because it's console and they have a set hardware spec, but it's still something to where to see them struggling when we've had 1080p 60 frame per second games on PC for, I mean, since the last console generation.
Yeah.
And we can't even squeeze it out of this console generation.
Yeah.
Well, the
performance-wise, I'm very underwhelmed with this generation.
Well, the one thing that I tell myself, and I don't know how true this is, and it could be just the way the systems are designed as a package, not any one particular thing, not the hardware, not the software, just the whole system itself, with their heavy reliance on the cloud gaming that they seem to be moving to with the Xbox One. PS4 is doing it with certain games as well. I think, yeah, they're moving some of the stuff off the console, but then they're putting more stuff back on. Because, okay, well, we moved these resources over here, so now we can do all this, but then we got to take this out. It's like a big shuffling match. I think the older this generation gets, the more they will figure out how much more they can get out of the actual Xbox. You know, just like they did with the 360. You know, you look at the quality of the games at launch, and then the quality of the games at the end of its life. There's a very sizable difference.
Yeah, you have a good point there.
I mean, you got Halo 2 that launched just previous to the 360 by, what, a year? 2 years?
A year.
Yeah, a year, which was developed for the old Xbox, which, you know, at that time, they were pretty much at their peak for designing games for the original Xbox. And then you roll into Halo 3. You know, you just look at the graphic difference just between those two games, and, you know, you're only talking 3 years difference. The technology just, it always amazes me how fast the technology becomes outdated. And that's kind of part of the problem with building the consoles, because when they actually started designing the console, it was probably relatively state-of-the-art stuff. But by the time they got everything assembled, you know, 3-4 years down the road, it's dated technology.
Yeah, that's true. It sucks to see that, and you would expect that 343 has had this hardware on their hands ever since they came out internally with the specs of the Xbox One. So they've had, from my understanding, they've had the console specs for this game since they started development on Halo 5.
Mm-hmm. But having the specs and having actual hardware are two different things.
True. The whole thing with Xbox touting that, and I haven't really looked into this as much on the PlayStation side, so I can't compare it directly, but as much as Xbox, the organization, touts that they're doing the whole 1080p gaming on the Xbox console.
Mm-hmm.
To see that support really not there, and to know it's not going to be there probably for another 2 years or so, it kind of sucks. And I mean, at this point, we're obviously off topic to not talking specifically 343, but to kind of go back to it, I know a few people asked the question online, well, can't we just take the graphics hit and still do split screen? I mean, why does it have to be all that graphically fidelity wise? And I mean, why not have the feature over the pretty graphics? Because when it comes down to some of the gameplay mechanics, having a game that works feature wise sometimes outweighs the graphical fidelity of a game. Because how much time are you going to be looking specifically at how specifically detailed one piece of geometry is? For most people, not that often. There's a small corner of the gaming community that really goes out there and tries to admire every single little piece of geometry that's in the game. But the majority of your players aren't going to be noticing it that much.
Well, the biggest problem is right now we're in the graphics wars. Everybody is touting, you know, 1080p. 2K, 4K, 8K, where does it stop? And, you know, that is just industry-wide. Where it came from, I have no idea. Personally, I don't even own a Blu-ray player yet.
Hey, dude, an Xbox One.
Well, I mean, a dedicated Blu-ray player.
Oh, Xbox One.
Yeah. You know, I didn't buy the Xbox One for the Blu-ray player. I don't even own a Blu-ray disc. All my discs are just DVDs. And for, you know, watching movies and stuff, DVD's fine. You compared to what I used to watch movies on, VHS tapes. You know, When I started in my electronics career, when I first started, I was playing with cartridge games. Okay.
Yeah.
I started on 8-bit. So when I got my Xbox, my original Xbox, oh my Lord, was that beautiful.
Especially on tube TVs.
Yeah, really. You see how people react just to the footage they put out for Halo 5. And they say, oh, it looks so great. You know, it's awesome. It's all this. That's how I felt with Halo CE. Uh-huh. Because previous to that, the most graphically up-to-date game I'd ever played was Super Mario Brothers.
That's saying something. Although, you can't beat Mario. I mean, Mario's Mario. No.
Not to mention, you know, the musical score. I mean, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you know, unfortunately right now, that's kind of the nature of the beast. We're in these graphic wars. You know, everybody wants more resolution, more pixels, more frames per second. And that's, at least that's the vocals, the people that are vocal. That's what they want. So that's what the people, you know, that's what companies are hearing and that's what they're producing. You know, that's the reason they've developed the, you know, the 4K television, because people want a higher higher resolution picture.
It's not going to matter at that point, though.
Exactly. It doesn't matter.
I keep telling people that bring up that topic of getting like a 4K TV or something, that you're not going to be able to tell, like sitting where most people have their couch compared to their TV, you're not going to notice the resolution at that distance to really make the payment to go to a 4K TV.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to be sitting basically, I don't know, 6 feet from the TV to maybe even see the difference in pixels for a 1080p TV at 52 inches.
If you're, you know, if you've got them side by side, you can see the difference. But if you're looking at them one at a time, like you're walking from room to room, you're probably going to hardly even tell the difference. Now, on the other side, with the 60 frames per second, I can tell a difference.
Frames per second, yes, definitely.
You know, that, you know, I would not argue even if Halo 5 came out 720 frame, as long as it was at 60 frames per second, I'd be happy.
And that's what the beta was, a 720p, 60 frames a second. Mm-hmm.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
The 1080p is not that important to me because I don't play on a monitor that's big enough to actually make use of a 1080p. You know, I set 2 feet from it.
Well, at that point, you would notice sitting that close to it.
But it's not a requirement. I mean, it's not going to add that much to my gameplay.
Right.
I could sacrifice the 1080p, but the 60 frames per second, no, I don't want to go back to a 30 frame per second game.
I completely agree with that.
I mean, the other night I fired up classic Halo 3 on my 360. Oh my God. Talk about I couldn't hit crap.
Right.
Still can't hit crap.
It's just those extra frames, it makes just a huge difference.
It does.
I really wish there was some way that they could keep the couch co-op there, because it's an important part of Halo, and that's what gets a lot of people into Halo. That's what got me into Halo. But on the other hand, in a way, and this is not 343 directly, but Halo kind of shot itself in the foot with the advent of matchmaking. That, you know, that's where it started. Because up until then, the only time you could, you know, only way you could play somebody was either LAN or split screen.
This is true.
And when they introduced Xbox Live, the couch co-op from that point on has been dwindling.
That is true. And a lot of the other first-person shooter games are only single-player campaign experiences anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Call of Duty is split-screen multiplayer. I don't think Battlefield is.
It wasn't. It hasn't been forever.
Really?
Well,
I don't
Call of Duty Modern
Call of Duty
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, you could play co-op over live. I don't know about local.
Yeah, you could do the Spec Ops split screen local.
I don't remember local in a long time. I'll look.
Like I said, I haven't played split screen in a lot of years.
I guess a good comparison would be Battlefield, because I don't think you can do split screen Battlefield at all.
How about Titanfall? Isn't it single player?
I believe so, but that also is a new IP. So I think they could get away with the no split screen more than something like Halo, which is established.
Well, yeah, people aren't going to expect. Right. Well, people would be more forgiving, but they would still. It's still something they would have liked to seen in the game. You know, the people that you're talking about, the people that do, you know, get together with their friends and their family and play local. Uh-huh. But, you know, there again, you've got a game that it only has one mode and it's online. So that type of person wouldn't be buying that game anyway, because it's an online game.
Correct.
You know, if they're somebody that just plays offline.
Right.
But, you know, Destiny's another perfect. Well, it's kind of a perfect example. It's an online game, but it still has a single player.
I wouldn't really call it a single player.
It does have a mode where you can play by yourself. Yes, they do recommend that you have two other people with you, but it's not a requirement.
True.
There are certain items in the game that, yes, you are required to have at least three people or six people, depending on what you're doing.
There brings up a good point. Destiny doesn't have split screen.
Yeah.
Well, and that whole game is multiplayer.
That's what GT just said.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
In Destiny's case, it was probably forgiven because, you know, this is a Bungie game, and Bungie came up with the couch co-op when it came to shooters. It was probably forgiven for them because of the way the game was designed, because the game was actually, you know, from the ground up designed to be played over an internet connection. And that could be part of Halo 5. You know, when they sat down to design the game, they said, okay, what features do we want? What features do we have to have to make a successful game? And which features are maybe not as important? And I'm not calling split screen unimportant. It's just you're setting your priorities, because they designed this game from the ground up for the Xbox One.
True.
So it could be just in the simple design of the video game, the way they built the game did not allow the split screen to be in there. You know, whether it has to do with the AI that you play with or the graphics or a combination of the two. But there is, you know, one thing that they did give you that you didn't really have before, and that's the drop-in, drop-out co-op.
I'm really looking forward to that, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
And that is kind of an excuse I would take to the whole experience not being able to do split screen. Because even the campaign is on dedicated servers.
Mm-hmm. I would hope that means a much more intelligent AI. Not that I wanted the game to get actually any harder, but it does, after a while, get kind of old being able to basically blow through the level and know exactly where every enemy is going to come from and what they do when they enter the room. To have a more intelligent AI system in the game will keep the game play fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking before, we don't want the campaign gameplay to get stale.
Right.
Well, you know, they give you the option in the previous games, you can turn on difficulty multipliers, which give the enemies more health, better shields, resistant to certain weapons, handicap you in the amount of ammo you can pick up and what type of battle information you have, like the malfunction skull or the blind skull, which that one I just really wish they'd never came up with. I think it's going to make the campaign a lot more interesting. And I just hope it all, you know, the sacrifice of the local campaign or the local co-op is worth it.
I think in the end, it's going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the most part, we're going to see a lot of, I mean, the campaign already looks like it's going to be a lot more fleshed out than Halo 4's campaign was. Just judging by the feedback that they got and seeing how much is being really played into the story. And on top of that, the fact that you can just jump in and out of someone's campaign. I think that being a trade-off for the no split screen is, for the most part, a good trade-off. There's still going to be the family situations where it'd be nice to play together as a family and not have to have four consoles and four TVs. But for those that do primarily play online or play by themselves. Like for me, I have a TV in my desk in my room, so that works really well for me. I think that's going to be great. I think you kind of pointed out some good points there, Godzilla, where you have, with dedicated servers, more possibilities for AI to be a lot more fleshed out, to respond a lot more naturally. You get some more uniqueness whenever you're running through campaigns multiple times, which actually makes speedrunning pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
That put a lot of variety in there. It'd be interesting to see when the game comes out with people like Eli or Lamb Chop, to see how speedrunning really takes a different turn. Because they also said I think they kind of said this at E3, that they're designing the campaign with speedrunners in mind. So there will be specific paths in campaign where it's not necessarily the main path that you're being guided towards, but there will be some optimal pathways for you to take in the campaign. And those will be the ones the speedrunners will really want to look out for.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of leads me to believe that not all of them, but certain enemies, and I don't see them not doing this, certain enemies are going to be at a certain place every time you play the level. But there's going to be other enemies that may not affect a speedrun route. Like if you're out exploring, looking for the rest of the story. And because they basically said, if you play straight through and just do the objective, you're going to miss a lot of the story. But if you're out looking around to find that story, I really hope that the AI is a little bit more unpredictable.
I have a good feeling it will be.
I wonder if, so have you guys played Left 4 Dead?
No, I have not.
Haas?
What? Sorry, I was reading the chat.
Have you played Left 4 Dead?
Yes, I have. I actually played it last night.
So Valve has what they call an AI director. And that system for their AI dynamically changes how the AI behaves, so that every time you go through one of the levels for Left 4 Dead, it's a different experience every time. There are certain areas that you'll get some of the bigger, badder zombies, like the witches and the... Gosh, I forget all the names of the zombies now. But anyways, you know what? You got what I mean.
Yeah, there's like the spitter and the fat one.
Right, right. The boomer.
One that jumps on your back.
The boomer, yeah. And the riding one. With the dedicated servers, there's a lot more options for a lot deeper AI coding. So that's going to be a real benefit to having the dedicated servers. Now, to kind of migrate topics over, that is still something that people are kind of struggling with the Xbox One platform, but I think it's something that's eventually going to kind of fade out, is the no local gameplay support.
Yeah.
For LAN tournaments especially, that's going to be something. Like, because we've seen all the issues that they've had with HCS, with having to try to do tourneys and whatnot. Although, I'm not sure how much I can say to what they're doing for Halo 5. I do know a couple of things. I'm not sure if I can publicly say it, but they are looking at ways to possibly mitigate some of the issues that they would have during LAN tournaments and official events for Halo.
I would having their own dedicated server at those locations be something that could be a possibility. I mean, I'm not a huge networking type guy, but
so at the season one finals, I was talking to Tashi about what they could possibly do for HCS going forward, especially when Halo 5 comes out. And with all the, like, for Halo 5 Guardians beta and like for I'm not sure if they did this for MCC specifically, but no, for all the times that we've seen the Halo 5 Guardians beta out, they have a local instance that they launch consoles in dev mode into Halo 5, and they start matchmaking from a dedicated laptop to all these consoles. Now, I'm not sure if that laptop is actually running the server or if that's just issuing commands to the Xboxes and then they're connecting to a specific server. I'm guessing that's what's happening, that they have a server specifically configured for a setup, like for the build that they have for Halo 5. I'm guessing, and I don't know how Xbox Live is engineered, specifically, but I was telling him about possibly creating, because I mean, for development purposes, they have to have their own probably privatized Xbox Live cloud during development so that none of that's out in the open internet. So if there's some way that they could kind of encapsulate that into a small private Xbox Live instance, that way when you have all these Xboxes, say at PAX or E3 or one of the official HDS events, you have all of them trying to ping this service because it's all DNS lookup. You have this instance that basically impersonates the Xbox Live service and say, hey, here I am, you can check in here, and that there are specific profiles for those consoles. And then you can use DevLine commands from a laptop to set up all the games and set up profiles for all those consoles. Then that eliminates the whole need for having to connect 8, 16 Xbox Ones to the internet, where for a trade show like PAX, you have so many booths consuming up internet bandwidth.
Yeah.
So that was an idea throughout the time.
What if they could use like the internal dev consoles without going into specifics? Any tests I've gone to at Microsoft, they have their own little network within there. It's, yes, they're connected to Xbox Live, but it's their own.
It's their own private Xbox Live.
It's not your everyday when I turn on my Xbox Live. They're very artificial, but they work. And any multiplayer form of that I've played on, never had an issue, never ran into a lag or a host issue. And that even goes back to the 360. And on the 360 multiplayer test, they were online. They were not LAN, what they would have us do. So I can't see why they can't have something like this for the HCS tourneys. And maybe that is something they're working on for Halo 5. We'll see. But
I hope so, because that'd be something that I think is, for as many issues as we've seen during HCS, I think that's something that's crucial for competitive tournaments.
They've definitely improved, though. With that being said, you gotta definitely notice the improvements that have been made.
Yes.
From the first event and from the first season to this season, we still see issues, sure, but I think we're slowly starting to get glimpses at what Halo 5 HCS will be able to do.
Yeah, I don't see where it would be that difficult to do exactly, you know, what you suggested, Dust, to basically set up your own little Xbox Live service for, you know, 8 or 16 consoles. I don't know how much computing power you would need to run an Xbox Live server, but I'm sure it could be packaged into, at minimum, a desktop that could travel. And the dev kit Xboxes, you've got to be able to get in there. And
so there are no dev kit Xbox One. All Xbox Ones are dev Xbox Ones.
Yes, but it can be turned on or off.
Right.
And I'm just basically using the dev kit to say, okay, it's turned on.
So the thing with dev mode is that there's extra CPU cycles allocated to collecting data and analytics. And for a game that's finalized, you don't want that extra processing power being consumed on something that is as important as a tourney that has prize money. So you wouldn't want to exactly do, I think, for tournaments, a dev scenario. But if there's still a way to kind of capture that impersonation of the Xbox Live trying to hit the Xbox One service, then I think that would be the way to go.
I mean, you know, with it being a Microsoft-sponsored tournament, basically, I'm sure they could probably find a way to do that. You know, they did actually write the code for the service.
I would assume there's a way to do it. I don't know how technically complex it would be, but I hope that's something that we could at least get at some point, especially for Halo.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to another topic. I think we've pretty much drilled out the whole split screen and dedicated server discussion. let's talk about the limited collector's edition and limited edition disc issue. So 343 has come out since E3 when they announced that there was no disc for the limited edition or the limited collector's edition, saying that there will be options for people to get the disc if you have purchased the limited edition or the limited collector's edition. And I believe they made this announcement shortly after San Diego Comic-Con. Now, originally, was this limited and limited collectors or just limited collectors that didn't have the disc?
I think it was both.
Just the limited collectors. Limited always had the disc.
Oh, it did. Okay.
So for the limited collector's edition, what they were originally planning to do was you get a download code and you could pre-download the game 7 days in advance. So they would be shipping all of the limited collector's editions to arrive on October 20th, which they're still planning on the shipping date for that. But now, since everyone's been in an uproar about having a disc, the latest they've said, and this isn't finalized yet, they still said they're looking into ways to actually do this, but they're looking at having a way for you to trade in your code for the game for a physical disc. Now, that likely means that for those who have pre-ordered the limited collector's edition, you will not be playing the game day one. There's probably some process where as you get the limited collector's edition, I'm guessing there's probably a self-return stamped envelope or something where you send in your code. They verify that it hasn't been used and they probably whack it so that it cannot be used, and then they probably send you a disc. That would be my guess as to how they do it. For someone like me, though, I will likely be purchasing the disc version of the game afterwards, and I don't mind doing all digital.
I'm the same.
Well, see, the way I'd planned on doing it before they actually announced that they were going to have a download code in that collection is I was just going to buy a digital copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love digital copies. Me too. Every game except for a sports franchise is digital for me now.
Yeah, in the preview program, you know, they were just had out, they were testing the backwards compatibility. And for giggles, I threw Reach in to see if maybe by some small chance it was actually part of the game and they just didn't announce, or part of the test and didn't announce it. Unfortunately, it wasn't. That was the first time I'd actually put a disc in my Xbox One, and I've owned it for over a year.
So I've put a couple of Blu-rays into my Xbox One just to see it work.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. I think that's the only time I've used the disc.
See, I've been asking for exactly what they're doing for a long time. I want a physical case with a download token inside. Like, that way my collector self and my shelf can continue to look complete. But rather than a disc that I have to either store in the case or in a CD book, I have a download code and it's on my Xbox and I don't have to worry about it again. But for the people that depend on trade-ins, okay, I get that. Or the people that display their disc, for the few that do that, I can see where the...
There's also another side to this. We live in a country where most of the internet in the United States does not have a usage limit as far as when you come to your high-speed home internet. But like in Canada, they have usage limits. They only get so many gigabytes per month. So downloading a game, and it's probably going to be a 30 gig, 50 gig game. Well, that could burn through half of their monthly usage.
Very true.
Just installing the game. That's one of the downsides of having all this digital content, especially with, you know, some of these games. Master Chief Collection is a prime suspect for this. Having updates that are gigabytes in size. It wasn't so bad in 360 days because, okay, it was, you know, an update was 200 or, you know, 500 megabytes. But you know, we're looking at updates that are, you know, 1.2, 1.5, 2.5 gigs.
And that's just one update when there are multiple.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's nice to have a physical disc. And I still have physical discs for all my Halo games. And I was going to have a physical disc for this, as far as I knew, until they actually announced what was, you know, how they were doing the limited collector's edition. But I still will have the bookcase, you know, the steel bookcase.
Yep.
I like how they're doing it, giving people the option to turn in their download code and get a physical copy.
I'm interested to see how it's going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for the people that order it online to have it mailed to their home.
Mm-hmm.
From the Amazon aspect, like, that's where I could see it getting sloppy. GameStop, I could see it being a little bit easier. You just take your code in, they can type in the code in the computer, make sure it hasn't been redeemed. Okay, here's your disc. But
yeah, but GameStop would find a way to screw that up. No, I'm serious.
I know.
You know, if you were in a power, whatever they call them, your gold member, whatever their power, little program power is.
Power up rewards.
Yeah, power up rewards. They'd probably find some way to screw you. Honestly, I think a better solution would have been to literally offer two versions of the limited collector's edition. One with a physical disc, one with a digital download. That way, the people that want the disc or need to have the disc due to, you know, data limits can just order it, and then they could have it for day one, you know, because they could still have them. You know, you can still install the game. You just can't play it, just like they did with the Halo 5 beta. You could download it, but you couldn't launch it until release day. And with the Xbox One, they have that capability. I don't know what it would have done to the cost of the unit. I don't know that it would have changed that cost. It's an option they could have done, but it might be, of course, at this late in the production, I'm sure it could have caused a whole lot of headaches.
Well, it's probably already causing headaches right now, because that's more discs that 343 has to have printed and pressed.
Yeah, but just having discs printed is a lot easier than having to build a whole new limited collector's edition at this point.
But you have to think that at this point, all the limited collector's editions are probably boxed up in production, and it wasn't designed to have the disc case or
exactly. The disc in and that's there. What I'm saying. You know, that's what I'm saying. At the point that they determined it was a problem, it was already too late to have an offer of two separates, because I'm sure all the LE editions have been complete for at least a couple of months now. Has anybody actually seen if they're still taking pre-orders on them?
Yes. Last I checked, about 3 weeks ago, you could on Amazon. I don't know about GameStop.
A limited collector's edition?
Yeah.
Wow. Those are supposed to be really limited.
Well, they may still be taking pre-orders on them, but they don't know exactly how many they're going to get yet. I find that.
Destiny Ghost Edition Crisis.
Yeah, I highly doubt it, but.
Yeah.
You can still pre-order right now.
Wow.
On Amazon.
I wonder if that just goes to show that people are really just waiting for Halo 5 to come out before they buy.
I can't say that I would blame anybody that does that.
Nah, I wouldn't either.
Well, they're saying in the chat.
I mean,
they're saying
I pre-ordered, but
that GameStop is sold out of the
LCs.
Limited collectors and the regular. But you know, the GameStop stores, they're allocated so many per store. You know, GameStop buys a total of so many copies of each from 343 or Microsoft.
Right.
And then anything after that is put out on the next run of the game, where Amazon probably doesn't put in their order until, you know, a couple months before the game comes out.
You can still pre-order on GameStop as well.
Well, I mean, at the store level.
The store level is a lot more controlled, though, compared to...
Yeah, but they're also going to delegate per the area. I mean, they're not going to give 150 copies to a store in the middle of nowhere in Montana and give 150 copies to a store in Seattle or New York. I mean, they're going to delegate on foot traffic that are in those stores.
Yeah.
So,
At this time, I'm going to go ahead and ask the stream for any topics that you want us to briefly talk about. There is one more topic that I want to bring up a little bit. It's not as big of an issue, but I still think it's something to discuss. So again, if anyone in the live stream has a topic you want us to briefly talk about for 5 minutes or so, then go ahead and throw it up. But the last one I wanted to bring up specifically was the requisition system. Now, there's a lot of debate in the gaming realm of, and it's not exactly this way for Halo 5, Guardians, and Warzone, but we'll get into details in a minute. But the whole pay-to-win system, it's very touchy in the gaming world, especially for something like Halo, where everyone is expected to be level playing field and whatnot. There's, with the requisition packs in Halo 5, you can buy certain elements for weapons, so scopes and mods and all that stuff that slightly alter the weapons themselves. Now, these are only applicable to non-arena game modes, from how I understand it. They've singled out Warzone for now, but I'm not sure if there's a gray area between arena and Warzone. Like, I'm not sure where traditional Oddball or Territories or Slayer really falls into the mix, but they said that all the requisition stuff that is non-aesthetics is outside of the arena, so outside the whole fair starts system. You still have the visible aesthetics stuff, so like weapon skins and armor sets and whatnot. Those will still be able to be used in arena, but those are usually like one-time consumable requisition cards. But other things like weapons and vehicles that you could call in during Warzone, those are requisition cards you have. Same thing with variable scopes and mods, silencers, all that kind of stuff. That's in Warzone. Now, if I remember right, I don't know if we talked about this specifically on the E3 podcast or if this was just in talking with some other people offline, but having the requisition packs in there for Warzone does kind of hint at the pay-to-win system on a very, very minor scale, but I think the big question is how much of that is actually going to affect the game. Obviously, the weapons and the vehicle ones is a drastic effect.
It really all depends on how hard the rec packs are to get in game, as far as how hard it is to earn them in game. If they're relatively easy to get, I don't see a real drawback to the rec pack system or the requisition system. And as long as they limit the weapon modifications to Warzone, which the way they've been describing it, that's the only place those are going to take effect, is in Warzone. And the fact that you can call in your whatever card you have for weapons in just this one game mode is a good thing. Because if you are somebody that doesn't want to do that, you can still go play the regular multiplayer with the fair starts, with weapons on map, and you can have your fun time online. I'm reserving my opinion of it until I actually get to see it and see what it takes to earn the rec packs in regular multiplayer or campaign or however they're doing it before I can really make an informed statement about the pay-to-win thing. Because with like Spartan Assault, you can buy credit to get power weapons to play the campaign with. You can spend real dollars to buy the credit so you can have the sniper rifle or the rocket launcher or the Spartan laser or the armored abilities to make the game easier to play. But they do a pretty decent job in the game of allowing you to earn enough credit to where if you want to use those, you can. Yes, you do have to grind a little bit more. You have to do the daily and the weekly challenges to earn the extra credit points so that you can buy those access to those weapons for the missions. But there's only so much that really applies in Spartan Assault, because once you've completed the campaign, basically the only thing really left to do is the achievements and grinding the Spartan Ops little challenges per level. You know, kill 100 elites with a plasma pistol or stuff like that. And that's what it really balances on. How hard are these rec packs going to be to get in game without spending any money?
So they're not going to be that difficult to get. I don't know what it's going to be in terms of rarity of certain items, but what they said at E3 was all, I can't remember if it was all gameplay or if it was just multiplayer, but I think it was all aspects of gameplay. Depending on your performance, you will get requisition packs or earn requisition credit in order to get requisition packs. I think someone compared it to how you could get the packs in Mass Effect. I don't think it's going to be exactly like that, but I think I had to talk with a few other people to be sure exactly what it is before saying anything like solidly yes or no. But if someone in the chat room has heard something about it, I know there's been a few YouTube videos out there on it. I just am not remembering the specifics at the moment, but I know for sure that you do get requisition packs depending on your gameplay. And for multiplayer in Warzone, based on your performance, you do get those weapons and vehicle requisition packs and cards. And there's still the option to buy them, but you don't have to buy them in order to still get them. For those who play Team Fortress 2, take it as you can buy certain items in Team Fortress 2, but you can also let them just be drops in the game. So for those who don't know, Team Fortress 2, you get certain items like hats and weapons via random drops in the game. And it's usually just for duration of how long you play. And some of them are achievement based. So once you get certain achievements in Team Fortress 2, you unlock certain weapons, you get drops that way. But depending on your performance, like how long you play and how well you play, you also get drops in game. So you don't have to buy the stuff in game. You can if you want to, but it's not required. So everyone for Halo 5 Guardians will have the ability to get all the requisition packs. Although I think they are discussing about having some special packs for like HCS team skins. So there'll be maybe some BR skins that are exclusive to teams, but most of the common ones that like would be available for purchase to everyone will still be able to be earned via just getting them in the game without having to pay for them.
Yeah, as long as you can have access to all the weapons and all the vehicles through earned rec packs, I don't really have a problem with it. It's when you have certain weapons that you have, the only way you can get them in your stack for requisition in the gameplay is to buy them. That's where we're getting on shaky footing. As far as the cosmetic stuff, you buying that stuff, more power to you, because that really, it doesn't affect game. It's just how you want your Spartan to look. And if you're willing to pay for it, that's fine. So I can see having certain skins or armors that are only sold and not available to earn in game. And I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
But as long, you know, I basically don't have a problem with it as long as it doesn't affect how people can play the game. You know, as long as they can earn rec packs that have the vehicles in them, that have all the weapons in them to be used in Warzone and Warzone only, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one question I do have is I understand having the cards for weapons, but for like the weapon add-ons, like the scopes, is that going to be like a one-time thing or is it a one-time use?
So for the weapons and vehicles, those are all one-time use for everything.
No, I meant the better or the different scopes and silencers and things like that. The weapon add-ons, is it, you know, once you've unlocked that rec card, it's yours. It's available for you to put on your BR or your DMR.
I want to say those are actually, I'm not sure. My gut reaction is that they are persistent, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, that's one of my big questions. Is stuff like that, is it a, you know, is it something once you get it, you have it, or is it you have to keep earning them to keep using it?
I think for the weapon mods, they're persistent. So I want to say it's one-time redemption on those.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but that's my gut reaction right now.
And I really hope those modifications don't alter the weapon performance in a huge amount.
And I think that's what a lot of people's caution is on how much it's going to actually change the gameplay. It's a good thing that it's not in Arena, because Arena is going to be where the competitive scene is going to focus on. But it's still one of those things where in Warzone, and I think Warzone is big enough to where the size will offset how effective some of these weapon mods are, but you still have, if people, like say one whole team is having one particular mod on a weapon that they have, and for some reason they just, that gives them the slightest of edges to completely decimate the other team and control the map, I think that's where a lot of the concern is for people on how much those kinds of mods actually impact the overall gameplay and how fun something like Warzone is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long, you know, with Warzone, I'll give them some playroom to where they can, you know, do these rec packs and the tweaks and stuff. But still, on the other side of that, yes, I know they have the Arena experience that they're putting together, but I still want to have basically vanilla Halo that I can go play for fun, because I'm not going to want to play Warzone all the time. I still want to be able to go into big team or team objective and, you know, have some fun in a social kind of way, not necessarily in a competitive kind of way.
Uh-huh.
I just hope that they have that social aspect to the Arena side. Well, I guess I shouldn't say Arena, the more traditional Halo.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because Warzone looks like a lot of fun, but sometimes, it's like I didn't play Invasion all the time. Don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun playing it when I did, but there were times I just wanted to go into, you know, a 4v4 capture the flag match, or one bomb, right, or something like that.
Yep, I agree. So I didn't see any particular questions come up in the chat. Did either of you see any questions?
I saw a comment.
Okay, I saw one about the Elite controller, but we're kind of focusing on Halo 5.
Yeah, it does play into the pay to win, though, because I've heard people say that. And to a point, you are correct. But if you look at all the pros nowadays, they're running
Scuffs.
Cinch, they're running Scuffs. They're running all these aftermarket modded controllers. I do not blame Microsoft for wanting to provide their own. Matter of fact, I wish they would have done this back in the 360 days when the modded controllers had, you know, started taking off. So to a point, yes, it is a pay to win, but to me, it's more being able to customize the controller to your play style.
I totally disagree with the play to win thing, and I've got that kind of reaffirmed after listening to Major Nelson's podcast that he had the creator basically of the controller on, and he talked about it. You know, it really isn't, you're not going to, the only advantage you're going to have is you don't have to move your thumbs.
Yeah. Like, and that's what,
like,
I'm saying.
I don't see that affecting the gameplay so much that, you know, the BR duel that I was going to be in is going to be won or lost because I have that controller. I see it more, okay, I need to melee, jump, and all this extra stuff, and I can do more without really having to throw my hand around really quickly or holding my controller in the claw form, which I have big hands. That hurts badly, and that screws up a lot of people's hands.
Well,
so it doesn't bother me. It's already out there with or without the controller. It's just, are you going to put your hand in that form? Are you going to learn how to play with that hand form? And yes or no? It just, I don't see it as a play to win. And for me.
Yeah. That's why I said kinda.
Okay.
I mean, yes, you are you are paying a premium price for a controller that will give you a small advantage because you can perform moves like BXB in an easier format than the traditional controller. You can customize the trigger sensitivity and the amount of travel. You can remap the buttons on the controller to do whatever you want.
I think that's entering a market, though, where you are in the elite if you are playing on a competitive level, and it's just enforcing the fact that if you want to play on this level, this is a tool that you will need.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, not this controller is not for every person that plays Xbox. And there's been a lot of comments out there that, you know, well, then, you know, if they're going to sell it, they ought to package it with the Xbox. No, because this controller is not for 90% of the people that play Xbox. Will I be getting one? Yes. Am I a competitive Halo player? No. I get it because I can customize it to my play style and I choose to spend the $150.
Yeah.
I have a controller sitting on my counter right now that I paid a lot more than $150 for, and I'm very unimpressed with it because I've owned it for less than 2 months and it's already broke.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've heard about the Elite controller, it's worth $150 just in durability.
Well, if you watch the video that Xbox put up on them making the controller, and then StrongSide actually had some appearance in the video too, talking about the precision of the controller, just how it feels. Being able to swap out the D-pad and the thumbsticks and all that stuff, you're getting your bang for your buck for $150, and that's comparable to all the other custom controllers that have the mods on them. Mm-hmm. And people are paying for those out the wazoo. So I mean, everyone that's making the argument that $150 is a little high or is too much, I personally thought when I first saw the announcement that $150 was insane. I was thinking more $100 for the controller.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard the $150, I was like, what the heck? No one's going to buy this. But then after seeing it at E3 and just like how good of a controller it actually is, it makes sense why it's $150.
Yeah. The custom controllers that I've bought in the past, and you know, I've paid, like this latest one was $260 for this controller. And it's basically a stock Xbox One controller with a different shell, a different color shell, and different color thumbsticks. It does have buttons underneath, like the paddles on the Elite controller, but those are the only buttons on it that can be remapped. Is those four buttons with the Elite controller? You can remap any button on the controller.
Yeah, any button, ABXY.
The only thing you cannot change are the actual sticks. Now, the push down on the stick you can change, but the actual stick movement, it's not like you can switch them from left to right in the software. You can do it in game by, you know, choosing southpaw.
Yeah. Your controller customization just is right there in the software. And Vanguard brought up the whole reprogrammable buttons just as you did in the chat. Another thing to that, though, is you can store up to 256 profiles on your controller. Like, it's actually on...
No, on in the software. On the controller, you can store two.
Which is awesome, because when the guy was describing it on the Major Nelson cast, he was talking about driving a Warhawk, right? Mm-hmm. So he switched it over to how he wants his buttons for when he's driving the Warhawk. And the second he gets out, he flips it over, and there's no delay, and he's right back to on boots to ground.
Yeah, I
was like, that's awesome.
I thought it was 256 on the controller, but you can only switch between two active profiles. I thought you can't take controller with you.
No.
You can take two profiles with you.
All right. I misunderstood that then.
The 256, the 256 are stored in the software, either on your Xbox One or on your PC. Now, I had a Razer controller that had that same option. It had, two profiles that you can quickly switch back and forth between. And I did that for you know, when I was playing Halo, I had a profile for driving, which basically I had the thumbstick sensitivity maxed out so I could turn really fast. And then I had my regular, you know, just walking around profile that I dropped the sensitivity on the thumbsticks down to, you know, where I wasn't, you know, just wobbling all over the place. And, you know, I had my, you know, my custom set buttons. So having the two profiles is really a great thing, and I'm glad they included that. But, you know, like I said, I just wanted to address the pay to win part of that, because it kind of tied into what we were talking about with Rec Pass.
I honestly didn't think about it really being a play to win issue or a pay to win issue with the controller. I mean, talking with a lot of people at E3, it didn't really come across that way for everyone that's in the competitive scene. It's just one of those things where it's like, okay, if I want to do well in a competitive scene, this is just something that I'm going to need to buy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people that are competitive in Halo or in any game period, but look, we're talking about Halo, they're not going to see it as a pay to win type deal. I'm talking about the people that are outside that competitive.
I don't think that's the target audience for the Elite controller, though.
No, it's not the target. It is not the target audience. And that's basically what I was saying, because I see all these people complaining, well, you know, it's a $150 controller. Why is it so much? Because it's an awesome controller.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
But it's not, Mark, if you're looking at a controller and say, why is it $150? It is not for you. It is not something that you're going to get your $150
exactly
out of. A person like me, yeah, I'll get my $150 out of it if it lasts longer than 6 months, because I tend to blow through controllers. And it's just, my play style is rough on controllers. I really wish Microsoft or anybody at 343, if you're listening, let me test your next controller design, and I'll tell you if it's a good one or not. If it'll last 6 months with me, you're good.
Judging from the video that they had out on this thing, I think they tested it pretty freaking well.
Well, they said the same thing about the regular controller too.
Fair point.
I have to admit it did last 8 months.
All right.
Before I literally shoved the right thumbstick through the controller.
Dang. All right. I'll know not to ever do a thumb war with you. No one laughed. Okay. That's a sign that we need to wrap up.
I was laughing on the inside.
Oh, that doesn't help me.
Sorry, I was reading chat to see if anybody had posted anything.
But we're going to go ahead and do the giveaway now. So for those that are attending the live stream, or I guess for those that aren't attending the live stream, we're giving away a Halo 5 Guardians San Diego Comic-Con exclusive pin. And let's see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eligible people right now in the chat. So I'm going to roll the random number generator. And do we want to do this where it hits it twice again?
That's up to you.
Let's do that. So
Pens will still probably win.
That would be very ironic if that happened. So for those who don't know.
Well, that's all right. You didn't count Pens anyway in that, did you?
Well, no, he won the poster.
No, I meant this time put him in.
No. He's not included in this. So. No.
Pence needs to play the lottery.
So we have Cryptic Player, Drone Rusher, Aryan War Game, Petamil, Pokemon Nerd 16, Score for Once, Oreo, and Vanguard Updates that are eligible for this thing. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we have 8 people up for this. Actually, I take that back. We got another person. Actually, we got a couple more people in here, so hang on, let me recount this. 1 Blue Crew, Cryptic, Drone, Irene, Mackie 44, Petamil, Pokemon, Score 4. So we have 10. Alright, so I'm locking it in at 10. I'm copying these names into a notepad and pasting them. So we're locking it in with these 10 people that are eligible. So again, this is for the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Halo 5 Guardians pin. And it's the first number to roll twice from random.org. So the first number is 9, 10, 5, 1. Thinking a long time. Wow. I've never actually seen random.org just hold up before. Six. That would be Petamil. Congratulations. You have just won yourself your very own Halo 5 Guardians exclusive San Diego Comic-Con pin. Congratulations, dude.
Congrats on the win.
If you want to claim that, then please send us a message over Twitch with your address. You can send it to the Podtacular account. Just send a private message there, and we will ship this out to you. So congratulations on doing that. If you're still in the chat, please say something. That way we know that you're actually here and you are acknowledging that you won. So yeah, it's that easy. We'll be giving away some more stuff on our streams. We're going to be doing two more shows next week, and then we will be doing two shows the week after, and that will be RTX week. So we'll have one next Tuesday, next Thursday, and then Tuesday, or no, I take that back. Then Thursday for the one in 2 weeks, and then our 500th episode, if everything goes according to plan, will be our 10-year anniversary panel at RTX. Fun stuff. So thank you everyone for tuning into our podcast tonight. We appreciate everyone who came out on the Twitch stream, and for everyone who downloads us, remember you can check us out on our website, podtacular.com, and no, Pins does not win if no one claims the prize, Laird. That'd be a little unfair. You can check us out on our social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, and all that stuff. If we have it, you can basically just go to podtacular.com/whatever. So you can do /Twitch/Twitter/Facebook/Instagram/YouTube, and it'll take you where you need to go. Make sure you check out our podcast affiliate network. We are part of the podcast. That is PODKAST. And you can find them over there at PODKA.ST, which houses podcasts like Critzcast, which is a TF2 podcast, Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast, The Learning Cliff, which is an EVE Online podcast, and then Work in Progress and How to Murder Time. If you're looking for some other gaming podcasts to fill your day, whether it be your drive to work or while you're at work or at home, then there are some pretty good gaming podcasts to listen to. I highly recommend checking them out. We're supposed to be doing another joint show at some point here soon. I think we've been trying to do one for the last 3 months and it's just never really turned out, especially being summer schedules and whatnot being crazy. So hopefully soon we'll be doing a big one, because we actually haven't done a joint one with since The Learning Cliff actually came as part of the network. So please make sure you go check them out if you're looking for some other places, and tell them that Podtacular sent you. We are still trying to get through all of our San Diego Comic-Con stuff, but by the time you're listening to this podcast, you'll have heard our interview with Stony Props. They are the folks behind making the armor that was at the In Real Life breakout at San Diego Comic-Con. So they made the helmet and the armor pieces that we donned on. So it's about a 12 to 15 minute interview, if I remember correctly. So make sure you go check that out on our website. And we'll be having a few videos up from the In Real Life breakout experience as well. So make sure you check out the Podtacular YouTube here in the coming weeks. That is it for us tonight. Remember, RTX is coming up in just 2 weeks. If you're going to be there in Austin, then please make sure you come by our panel. We are sitting, I don't know what the room is. I haven't actually looked it up yet, but we are in the 2:30 time slot on Saturday. We're going for 90 minutes, and you will have the opportunity to get some really cool Halo merch there. And then we also have our anniversary party, which is on that Saturday as well. That would be August 8th. And it will be at 7:30 at the Moonshine Bar and Grill in Austin, Texas. It's about a 3 to 5 minute walk from the convention center itself. So if you're going to be in Austin, then we hope to see you there. That'll wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks again for everyone tuning in. Remember, HCS Season 2 Finals is this weekend, so please go check that out. You can check that out over at twitch.com/Halo and go root on for your favorite competitive team. We'll depart from there. So in the meantime, keep on dragging controversial Halo 5 issues, or no disc, no split screen, whatever you prefer to have your controversial topic be. Just keep on fragging it.